impacts related to the coronavirus, COVID-19.
Charles, thank you.
Morning, President Sullivan, members of the board. Thank you for this opportunity to provide this overview of some of the financial impacts that we're seeing related to COVID-19. It works, Melissa, thank you. But we have agenda, so today we'll review Senate Bill 998, or SB 998, in particular the 60-day delinquency provision. We'll also talk about the executive order that was signed early April, and Mr. Jones referenced it earlier today in this meeting, related to COVID-19 and what are the impacts that we're seeing, again, to customer payments and delinquencies tied to both of those items. And then my counterpart, Mr. Turner, will be on later on the presentation to talk about connection fees and other fiscal impacts that we're seeing. So this is a slide that you're very familiar with. Senate Bill 998 was passed or signed by the California governor September 18, and it applies to water utilities that serve more than 200 connections. Obviously, EMWE is included in that. The bill states that its primary objective is to minimize the number of Californians who go without water due to their inability to pay their bills. And as a note, EMWD was compliant with this bill by February 1st, 2020, which was the effective date. So the 60-day provision, as I mentioned, this is one that I was definitely keeping a close eye on, knowing that it would impact our delinquency timeline. In summary, the provision reads, a water system shall not discontinue residential service for non-payment until a customer has been delinquent for at least 60 days. So the table below illustrates what the impact of that provision to our delinquency timeline. So if you look at the middle column, it represents the former timeline, and over to the right, it represents the current timeline. And really what we're trying to highlight here is the added 38 days to this delinquency timeline. You'll see the former timeline, we were running all the way to day 50, and now we're running all the way to day 88. So that obviously has a significant impact into the delinquencies that we'll be reviewing here. So as Paul mentioned, the governor signed an executive order related to COVID-19 on April 2nd, 2020. And in this order, there were restrictions for water shutoffs to homes and small businesses as the state responded to COVID-19. In the order, there was also language in there that talked about water systems shall restore residential services to occupied residents that had been turned off since March 4th, and obviously we did that. But what's interesting and very important to note is there was nothing in the bill, in the order that eliminated the obligation of water customers from paying their bill for a water system to charge customers for services that they provide or reduce the amount that the customers owe. So I think that's really important for us to note. So as I mentioned, there's a couple different things that we're seeing impacted by the aforementioned items. One being residential aging, account aging. We're seeing that's been impacted, and we're seeing an increase in unpaid customer bills that are 61 days or greater, and we'll talk a little bit about that here. We're also seeing an increase in payment arrangements. So payment arrangements are when customers reach out and ask for assistance, and we take their balance and break it down into smaller manageable payments. And then lastly, we're seeing, due to the stay-at-home order, we're seeing that customers are shifting in how they're paying their bills. So from a residential account aging, what you're looking at here is the blue graph represents 2019, and the green graph represents 2020. And at the close of April, you'll see that the account aging was all the way up to 10.5%. Which equates to about just under 8,000 accounts. In comparison, at the close of 2019, the account aging was 3.5%. And Turner will be talking a little bit about the Great Recession of 2008-2009. But as you'll see here illustrated, at the close of 2009, it was 11.4%. So know, somewhat in line with what was seen there in 2009. Okay, so payment arrangements. You know, coming into this year, we saw the typical increase in payment arrangements following the holidays as folks try to get back on track with their bills. And I think it's also important to note that we've been very clear with the call center staff to offer assistance when customers do call in. So by offering payment arrangements, adjustment of late fees and things like that, you know, we're doing everything that we can to assist customers. But what's interesting to look at here is at the close of April, there was about 5,589 payment arrangements that we had processed to the tune of $331,000. And then finally, on my portion of the presentation, so as I mentioned, you know, customers, you know, due to the stay-at-home order, they're having to find different means to pay their bills. And what you're looking at here is the dark blue graph represent electronic payments. The light blue represents customers that pay us through the mail. And the green bar graph represents payment sites. So think Cardenas or grocery store that has that capability. And what you see is at the close of April, you know, we're seeing incremental shift, about a 3% shift in electronic payments. Which makes sense, right? So folks are not able to go to the post office or to Cardenas because they're home. So, you know, if there is a silver lining, is, you know, we've invested in, you know, in this technology so that customers can utilize them and they're using them here. So with that, if there are no questions for me, I'll pass it over to Turner, who should be on the phone.
When we stop, are there any questions on the first part of the data here with respect to the shutoffs and
surprisingly high number, but I guess I'm not that surprised.
Right. Yeah, I'm surprised it ramped up that quickly. It didn't ramp up that quickly from 2008 to 2009, because it took a little while for people to have an issue, but this was pretty dramatic. So
I think both of those items, kind of, you think of a perfect storm, right? So you have Senate Bill 998, and then soon after that, you have the executive order that, you know, that we're not shutting people off, and both happen at about the same time. And then all the other things that are going on with the current events, right? So folks have, you know, lost jobs and things of that nature. So that ramp up is all those things put together, I assume.
So Charles, I'm guessing that because of the high number, I know we have our, what we call kind of our frequent flyers of late payment, but you're probably seeing a lot of customers that have never been late before, correct? That are making either late or non-payments?
Yeah, we haven't looked at the data that closely, but I'd assume that that is a fair statement, that in addition to those frequent flyers, to use your term, that we're seeing others who typically don't fall into those buckets. I'd assume that that's a true statement.
And we can look at that data and bring that for a future. We're going to do regular reports to the board on this.
So no, that's I'm just guessing.
That's a good question.
So, any other questions for me before I pass it on to Turner? Okay.
President Sullivan had a comment of interesting graph. I didn't realize the drop was that much higher than the Great Recession. And I'm surprised the current state we're in is still lower than the Great Recession, but I think it's going to ramp up because I don't recall that during the list that state government saying, don't worry about paying your water bill, we're not going to cut you off. So I'm surprised that we haven't seen even more late payments.
Yeah, I agree with you, Randy. It'll be interesting for the next 2 months to see if this thing continues to, they're not going to let anybody go back to work for another couple of months. It could very well double. I don't think we've seen the total impact yet. I agree with you.
Charles, do you want to share a little bit about your process and how we're trying to encourage them to make even minimal payments or just kind of stay on track?
Yeah, as part of that payment arrangement process that I talked about earlier, so when the customers do call in, we do encourage them to make some kind of payment for us to then engage you know, that payment arrangement process for them. So we continue to do that and encourage them to make a payment now, and then we break up the balance into smaller payments. We've been very clear on the various tools for them to pay. So they recently launched the MW My Account portal. For those that are staying at home, we're being very clear that they can still tap into those systems and submit their payments.
So the 10-point-some percent, is that somebody that they're just not paying at all, or does this include everybody that there may be some payments that they're making just to keep themselves out of
it's
a total issue 3 months or 4 months from now?
I think the importance with our customers in helping educate them, because you know, it's just going to snowball. And so we're trying to help them understand, you know, maybe just making partial payments. It's not like a credit card where they're going to get charged interest, you know. So hopefully any little bit can help their situation if it's available. If not, we are working on terms to help them spread it out.
Right.
But the whole point is to help our customers kind of get through this tough time, but still kind of help them manage their finances in a sense, so that
right.
It doesn't get too big to you know,
to recover from.
Just an added comment to that. I mentioned earlier the state had issued these guidelines regarding payment plans. One of the guidelines they had that we commented on is they said payment plans should go over a minimum of 12 months. And we find that, and commented back, that you do not want them to go past 12 months because customers essentially can never catch up.
Yeah.
And so that's some of the feedback we provided to the state on their guidelines. But again, they don't have direct experience. It sounds like a good idea. We'll make them longer than, you know, 12 months or greater. But we find it's really contrary to getting customers caught up based on our experience. So
yeah.
That's one of the items we did feed back to the state.
Charles, could you remind me, so if there's an account at a property and they just don't pay their bill, we have the ability to put that on the property tax rolls eventually for when the property is sold.
Yeah, we can definitely.
Okay, so ultimately there may be a recovery of some of this money.
We're also pursuing income tax.
Income
because,
tax, yeah.
We, okay. With the Social Security number, mm-hmm. we can put it on the income tax as well, which would be more probably timely.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that we are looking into as well and
yeah.
going to start that program.
Okay, so we're coming up with some recovery efforts in the long term.
Yeah, so the current process is we'll put a lien on the property, but to your point, Director Pauly, is a property tax option, and as
uh-huh.
Laura mentioned, is the income tax option that we've also looked at. Those are things that we could potentially pull out should this thing continue on.
Okay.
Any other questions on this? This is some good feedback. We'll bring
that's great feedback, Charles. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Yes, Charles.
So we now like to go over to kind of more global fiscal-related impacts,
uh-huh.
and Charles Turner's going to speak uh-huh. to that portion of the presentation. Charles, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Well, good morning to you all, and I appreciate the opportunity to present the side. As Charles mentioned, there's a lot of great data on the customer service side as it relates to the effects of COVID and SB998. But we want to step back a little bit, talk about how this relates to our accounts and our financials, but then go more broadly into just other areas is below 5% all the way until we got to February of this year. Just started going higher, and then in March we finally climbed up. We're almost back to that 10% mark. Now, that is historically kind of the level that I look at as being kind of the trigger point of saying we've got an issue, we've got people going into multiple months. It's about 10% of our customers going to multiple months of not making their payments, and then we need to start doing some additional adjustments. And under COVID-19, we have a NFC 998. Obviously, we have additional considerations than we have had in the past, given some of our requirements. But we still know that we have lots of tools in our tool basket. And the board members mentioned our collection efforts, our ability to go forward and make payments that could be done on other means, whether that's through property tax bills or collections through income tax. There are other means that can be done that we did not deploy back in the Great Recession or during the drought. But we feel there are ways in which some tools which we can use to mitigate this line from growing dramatically higher. But we have seen this effect. So as you can tell, we've gone higher. It's not dramatically higher relative to where we were in the Great Recession or during the California drought. But the trend is there, and this is one of the items we want to bring back to the board frequently so we can talk about what this means and the tools we're using to address it. Now going to slide 12, this is same information, similar information shown a little bit different way. This is looking at the late payments at the same time period, but relative to revenue, so the accounts receivable as a percentage of our total operating revenue. And you can see the similar EKG type line up and down, all the way until the California drought. But then in 2015, the board approved the implementation of a late fee, which would go into effect as soon as the customer was late. So, and we would assess that charge of a $25 late fee for each late payment. By instituting that one change, you can see a dramatic impact on our bill payment. Suddenly, customers were not going into 2 month, 3 month late payment arrangements. They were making monthly payments continually. So we were went from, you know, they went from 4 to 10% receivable kind of range. We went all the way down to 2%. We've been hovering around there for the last several years. And you can really attribute to a change in our methodology and the signaling we're giving our customers that timely payments are something we appreciate, something that we want to manage to. We think it's a fair and equitable way for all of our customers to enjoy low rates. And by paying on time, we're able to ensure lower rates for everybody. And people have been honoring that for several years now. And so we've seen great results, but we are starting to see that some customers are now coming in higher. Our receivables are starting to trend upwards. But we are at a very low level as a baseline going into COVID-19. So feel comfortable in that from a historical perspective. We're in good position, but something we're going to continue to manage through over the next couple of months as we navigate the COVID-19 environment. Going to slide 19, this is another key metric. I know we've spoken about it on our quarterly financial highlights with the board. We get a question about account receivable write-off and what does that mean overall. On slide 15, what we're showing here is just what is the annual amount of write-off during each year. So you can see, you can see during 2009, at the peak of the Great Recession, we had $1.4 million in total write-offs for connections, which is reflected in the green line. And our revenues that were coming in have continued to escalate as well. We've had 8 straight years of growth and strong growth, particularly the last 5 years. You can see that we're around 4,000 to 5,000 EDUs a year, and that translates to north of $50 million as annual revenue for us to fund our capital projects and debt service. And we're on track for this fiscal year to continue to meet that $50 million level with roughly 4,500 EDUs. So we're in a really strong position. We're continuing to grow. We're also looking monthly at our EDU connections. Going through March, we had really strong connection levels. Our April numbers actually just came out yesterday, I believe. A little softening on our number of new connections, but still, overall, year-to-date, we're strong, and we're still getting new connections. There's over 150 new EDUs in the month of April. And I know talking with the development services desk with Corey Wallace and management, they've continued to see active development throughout the service area. We're having residential development, commercial development continue to move forward, and we're seeing heavy activity connections. But we also want to recognize that there is a potential for some connections to fluctuate. We just don't anticipate at this time that it's going to have an effect like we saw during the Great Recession with a great drop-off. So this is just something to keep in mind as we talk about some modeling and some exercises for forecasting for the future. But having said all that, going to slide 15, you know, connection fees is one thing, some of the other economic activities is another. But when, at the end of the day, the district is actually well positioned to navigate challenging times. It's really driven by a very stable organization and a stable mix of charges. We have property taxes, standby charges, and various fees that are very diverse, and we're continuing to grow. So this chart here is just kind of showing the last several years since 2015 that we've grown from $283 million a year to over $383 million. And it's made up of a stable of different revenue sources, many of which are fixed revenues, including their property taxes, our fixed a water charge, our wastewater charge is a fixed charge, and when you mix those together, it gives us a lot of resiliency for the district. And it also, in my mind, represents that even with certain sensitive revenue sources like, say, connection fees or the potential for water sales, having a slight effect from write-offs if those were to increase. At the end of the day, it's not a significant component of our overall revenue sources. And it also doesn't go to zero. Our revenue sources could have a slight adjustment in certain categories. But given the amount of growth we've seen in the last 5 years, we don't feel it's going to be a sizable impact to the district. But we just thought this might be a little more comforting to see that the district's resiliency is very strong. So going to slide 16, we just wanted to reemphasize the strengths of the district. In 2020, the district is stronger than it's been, particularly since 2008, and we're prepared to deal with any uncertainties going forward, particularly in this moment in time of COVID-19, but also any other events going forward. We feel very well positioned. For example, the district's cash reserves and investments have increased by 38% since 2008. Our water, sewer, and recycled water operating revenues have increased by 60% since then. And our property taxes and standby revenues have increased by 15% since 2008. So because of all of these improvements by the district and our strong financial metrics, the district has been upgraded by the rating agencies to a AAA. And the rating agencies were recently provided an affirmation of those strong ratings by affirming our AAA senior lien, AA plus subordinate lien, which they gave to us on April 23rd. So we're one of the first utilities, water utilities, to come to the rating agencies in the midst of the COVID-19. We presented our case to them in early April, and we're really pleased to see them affirming our rating given they have a lot of questions about COVID-19's impact. We shared with them some of the data I just shared with you. And they were also sure that the district's well positioned, and we feel that that gives us the room to navigate and continue to grow our district. So with that, going to slide 17, though, we're not completely comfortable to say, well, we'll see what happens. We want to make sure we're planning and prepared for whatever might come. So some of the exercises we're preparing now are the development of a model that can project different economic and financial scenarios and present different outcomes for the board. So some of those outcomes would be, in looking at the key assumptions, we would like to be able to adjust those, like customer payments and collections. Perhaps if water demand might fluctuate, what happens if connection fees dissipate? What happens also, though, commensurately with operating expenses? Maybe those go down in certain categories. Perhaps they might go up in others. Let's adjust those. And then property tax collections, let's see if there's any effects. What happens if, for example, those might go down in the next year or two? So with all those inputs going into a model, we will project an overall fiscal impact to the district. This would include our revenues, expenses, and our funds available for funding our capital projects. And I can then see what the net effect of that would be on any draws on reserves relative to what we already project. And then ultimately, looking at our fiscal metrics like our debt service coverage, our daily cash, our aging receipts, and ultimately the write-offs that we talked about earlier. So this is a model that we're in development now. And our next steps on slide 18, we would like to come back to the board, talk about these financial projections and scenario plans, but also come back with Charles Cameron and talk more about the updates of what are we seeing with real data from the ground on customer payments, payment plans, the effects on those ability of customers to pay, and then what are those effects on the financials on our receivables, and then how does that translate into our projections. So our recommendations or thoughts on this was to come back to the board June 17th and present the model scenarios. And we also see that this is a great exercise for us to feed into our other topic for that board meeting, which is our second year biennial budget. We adopted the biennial budget last fiscal year, so we've already approved the fiscal year 2020-21 budget. But we wish to come back to the board to review those figures and present to you the second year, and also review the capital projects and the operating fixed asset budget with any adjustments that we think are reasonable for a certain proper measure, given the assumptions that were used a year ago have changed. We want to make certain slight adjustments where it makes sense, but we would like to bring that back to the board along with our financial model on June 17th. So with that, that concludes my section of the presentation. Happy to answer any questions.
Board, have any questions of Charles?
Charles, it's Phil Pauly. Given record low interest rates, have we, you, in your opinion, taken all the opportunities we can on our debt?
Yeah, I believe so. We are, appreciate you bringing that up. The reason why I talked about our rating was just to talk about how great our ratings are, but also to talk about the efforts we're doing now. We're accessing the markets today. We're monitoring the markets today with a potential financing to take out about $100 to possibly up to $200 million of variable rate debt. That does fluctuate. That has the potential to go much higher. But we have the opportunity now to possibly fix out those interest rates and lower the risk associated with those products. So that hopefully will culminate in the month of May. And after we complete that, we've literally evaluated every portion of our debt. We've
Thank you.
Other questions?
I don't think we have any other questions.
Great presentation.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great presentation. I think it just puts us in a great financial position if we can get rid of the vast majority of whatever the variable rate debt is and make it fixed, because someplace down the line, if we ever need to, we can always go back to some variable rate debt. But this is pretty much gives us a nice guarantee for looking out in the future.
So as a follow-up, we'll come back, as both Charles mentioned, and provide the finance and customer service data update, and we'll research this question that you had, Director Pauly, regarding frequent versus new customers in the 60-plus day aging. Yeah, it should be interesting to look at that. So we'll come up with a metric for that and bring that back.
And we can also bring back how this debt issuance is going. The market's been kind of up and down a little bit, so we're waiting. We're hoping for May, and June we'll be able to report back how it goes.
Okay.
Terrific. All right. With that, we'll go to agenda item 7, which is receive and file. I'll accept a motion and a second for approval of items 7A through 7B.
I'll make the motion.
Okay. Been moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Thank you. Motion approves unanimously. We'll go to agenda item 8, which is our calendar review. Nicole.
Good morning, President Sullivan, members of the board. Actually have two events to present to you this morning.
Wow.
Local Government Commission is holding its third workshop in the Santa Ana Watershed Ambassador Program. That workshop will be held via virtual conference on June 4th, which is a Thursday at 1 p.m., and it will be hosted by the City of Corona if anyone is interested in participating. The second event is the Water Reuse California Conference has gone virtual. The conference will be held on June 24th and 25th. It's a Wednesday, Thursday. And the keynote address will be provided by Kristen Peer, who's the Deputy Secretary and Special Counsel of Cal EPA.
Yeah, I'm gonna look at part of it, so if I can get the agenda so I know when I can log in and
absolutely, I'll get you the information on the sessions and events, Director Sullivan. To page 2, we have the board's master calendar for today through May 20th. Beginning with tomorrow at 9 a.m., the Multi-State Salinity Coalition will be holding its board of directors meeting. Director Sullivan will participate.
Yes.
The Joint Inland and Orange County Caucuses will be held via conference call at 11:30 a.m. for Director Record. And the Metropolitan. Thank you, Director Record. And the Metropolitan Water District's Finance and Insurance Committee agenda review will be held at 3:30 p.m., Director Record.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you. The Board Admin Committee will meet tomorrow at 4 p.m., Directors Pauly and Sullivan.
Yes.
Nicole, I'm going to probably have to call in for that, so either okay. Nicole or Tammy, if you could get me, email me, whatever we okay. need to look at.
Absolutely, Director Pauly.
Sorry about that, but no worries. Changing schedule, so.
Thank you. And on Monday, May 11th and Tuesday, May 12th, the Metropolitan Water District Board and Committee meetings will be held, and that's for Director Record's calendar. Wednesday, May 13th, Director Pauly has an update with the General Manager at 7:30 a.m. On Wednesday, May 13th as well, the Diamond Valley Lake MOI Implementation Committee will meet at 1:30 p.m. via conference call, and that's for Director Record's calendar. On Thursday, May 14th, Director Slauson has an update meeting with the General Manager at 7:30 a.m. And for Director Corona's calendar, the Rancho California Water District Board meeting will be held on the 14th at 8:30 a.m. And on May 14th at 2:30 p.m., Director Record has an update meeting with the General Manager, followed by the Board. Thank you. Followed by the Board Planning Committee meeting at 3:30 p.m. on the 14th for Directors Corona and Record. On Monday, May 18th, the CalDESAL Executive Committee teleconference is scheduled at 11 a.m., Director Pauly.
Correct.
And the SAPA Commission meeting will be held at 9:30 a.m. on Tuesday, May 19th. Director Slauson. Thank you. On page three, we have the upcoming board meetings and board committee meetings, which are all on schedule at this time. On page four, the joint interagency meetings and district holiday schedule is listed. Are there any questions or additions for the calendar? That concludes my report. Thank you all.
Thank you.
With that, we'll go to the director's meetings. Director Polly.
Yes, I attended the quarterly deferred comp administration meeting, which was very interesting given all that's going on in the financial markets. And I was pretty impressed that we did not have a lot of people at Eastern bailing out of the markets, et cetera, that they're holding tight, which they should, on their retirement program. So I think that was very positive. We made a couple decisions under the CARES Act, which would allow people to borrow from their retirement. Paul, remind me what the number was, if you can, or Laura, what we decided as a group, I think, to...
It's 50,000.
50,000, okay. I think the CARES Act, we had to make a decision of what people could borrow. So anyway, it was a very productive meeting given the circumstances. So again, I think we had the right team advising the committee, and it was very good. I don't know if Laura, if you had anything to add to that. Do you have anything to add? I think it was...
No, you covered it. So we are allowing... We've always had 50,000 as the limit, so now they just have more opportunity to take out loans, less stringent requirements for those that maybe spouses have lost jobs or so forth. So I think it will help our employees out. And I concur with Director Polly about our investment returns. I was... thinking it might be a lot worse, but we still have to wait till June and see where the numbers come in, but I was pleasantly surprised that it was about 12%. I was expecting it to be double that. So.
Yes, so that's my report on that.
Terrific. Director Record.
Yes, F&D meetings, we have two April 28th. One was IRP update, moving along okay. The other was executive. And of note at that meeting was the impending retirement of General Manager Tightner. Chair Gray put together a select committee to do a recruitment, which was challenged very directly by Director John Murray from the City of LA, who's chair of Operations Personnel Technology Committee. He's gone to the General Counsel to get an opinion about the Met Admin Code. The chairwoman being able to form her own committee and asked to have an agenda for the executive committee, at which time there was a motion to move that process into OPT committee. It was a very contentious discussion and a very close vote, and it is going into the OPT committee. It was, in my opinion, a kind of a dark day for Metropolitan. I don't know where Director Murray is coming from. And I don't understand why he's so adamant that he needs to control this process. He was included as a member of the select committee, so we'll see where it goes from here. That's my report.
Thank you, Director Record. Director Slauson.
Yes, I attended the SAPA meeting on April 21st. Discussed the amendments to the agreement with PWI on the Prop 84, Prop 1 IR. Draft funding award and for a strategic plan facilitator engagement. On April 23rd, like Director Polly referred to, I attended the conversation oversight committee and
Okay. I had my update with the general manager on April 22nd, which is always extremely informative for myself. And also, yet on Monday was the WRCOG Executive Committee meeting. We had four items to be considered. One I really couldn't vote on. It was to do with TUMP fees. But anyway, it was still holding a virtual meeting, and actually it was very well done. So with that, do we have any director's comments or future agenda items?
I just had one. Oh, go ahead, Dave.
Thank you.
I just wanted to comment that as we go into, I think, month three of the coronavirus situation, that this agency really and the management here has done an outstanding job of managing what is kind of an unprecedented event as far as deploying people, keeping things going where it's almost seamless. So I just want to thank them again from my perspective of doing a fantastic job in what is very, very unusual circumstances. And as I told Nick, this past week we had a crisis on top of a crisis, and we managed that flawlessly where we didn't lose service for people. So again, just kudos to everybody here from my perspective of what a fine organization this is.
Yeah, I'll chime in with that because I do hear from the development community and the BIA. And the things that this district does to keep things moving along is very well respected. As one of them said, it just shows that Eastern's probably one of the only agencies out there, whether it's city or it's a water district or it's a special district, that has the ability to walk and chew gum at the same time, because a number of them can't. And so, you know, things continue to move forward with that, and that's truly appreciated. Anyway, I just wanted to make an update. I did receive a call last week from Andy Domnigoni on another matter, but at the end of the phone call, he said that his mom was beginning to fail rather rapidly due to the long effects of a stroke and the advent of some advanced Parkinson's. And Director Corona informed me this morning that Jean did pass away last night. And the Domnigonis have been an advocate here for a long time, and I think it would be appropriate at some point when services are announced that we send some flowers. They've been, not only have some of them been employed here, but they've been an advocate in many respects for EMWD.
Absolutely.
Agreed.
We'll take care
Agreed.
Of that.
Okay. Council, I assume we have no reason for a closed session today. Okay, and with that, hearing nothing else, we will adjourn to our regular meeting on Wednesday, May the 20th at 9 a.m. I thank you all for the day. And I thank...